Hello, I'm Jonathan Mosen. GW Micro of Fort Wayne, Indiana produces one of the most popular screen readers for Windows, WindowEyes. On the Blind Line of Saturday the 17th of July, I spoke with the president of GW Micro, Doug Joffre, about the past, the present, and GW Micro in the future. We began by talking about how Doug became involved in Access Technology.
Actually, that was all pretty much by chance. I had been going to college, and I don't remember exactly what year it was, but certainly very early in my college years, probably the first year, freshman year. And I was going for a computer science degree. It's actually mathematics with a computer science option, is what it was called. And at the time, I had worked for a local computer store, just doing odd and end jobs and things like that, emptying trash cans, whatever it took, just to get into that store. And they knew that I was doing some programming things on the side and things like that, not in the adaptive market at all. But a blind individual by the name of Bill Grimm came in and had wanted to see if that store had anybody that they would recommend as far as helping him do some of the programming projects and things that he had. And I had some stumbling blocks and there was too much for him to do. So they had recommended me, and this was all new to me at that point. I had not a clue of any of this stuff. So this was back in the early 80s. And just started doing some work for him. At that time, he had a company called Computer Aids Corporation, which that was really, Bill Grimm and Computer Aids were really one of the pioneers in this industry, at least in the States, as far as getting Apple II products way back then, the Apple II, dedicated talking application. And he had a product called Document way back when. And if you look at it today, it's ridiculously silly, but back then it was very good, and it was state-of-the-art back in the early 80s. Prior to that, people had just been using typewriters and things like that with no speech at all. So making corrections was just not an option back then. So it was actually taking off, and he was doing very well with it, but he needed to update it and things like that. And then he wanted to do some projects like a talking terminal program. DBS systems were very popular back then. And so I had worked with him on that to get a product at that time called Talking Transcend. And then we just went on and did Talking Info, which was a database program. And then ultimately I started working for him full time and did all kind of odd and end projects. Word Talk, File Talk, Braille Talk, Term Talk. And then we ultimately got into the Small Talk product and created that and just went on. So I had worked for him for roughly about 7 years full time and maybe a little bit even before that part time.
Gosh, but you do bring back some memories when you remind me of the old Apple IIe days and bulletin boards. We've come an incredibly long way, haven't we?
It's tremendously long way. Like I say, I go back and look at that software that people were using back then and thought, how did they get anything done? But like I say, back then that was state-of-the-art and it was very productive for them.
It's an interesting thing because blind people using computers in those days used to have to be so much more able to get under the bonnet, didn't they? You know, under the hood, as you Americans say.
I was going to say, if you could translate that for me. That's right. It was not for necessarily beginning type user. You got your fingers dirty a lot of the time, having to get in there, and which today would be unacceptable.
And then how did GW Micro come about? Did Computer Aids Corporation dissolve, or what happened there?
Yeah, unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I guess, fortunately, unfortunately, but Bill Grimm just kind of got burnt out at that time, and this was around the late 80s. I think 88 is when I first had noticed it, and the industry was kind of shifting a little bit, and he was getting a little bit burnt out and just didn't have the drive anymore that he used to have. And so the company decided to close its doors, I think it was like November of 1989, and so at that point, I was jobless, and so I went out in the industry and started looking a little bit, but at the time I thought, well, maybe we can make this work, and my partner, Dan Weirich, had done a lot of the hardware for Computer Aids towards the last couple years anyway. He was there maybe about 2 years towards the end, and he had all the hardware knowledge, I had all the software knowledge, and I had, for the past year, with Computer Aids, been working on Vocalize, but it wasn't done yet, and it never actually was released. So when Bill decided to close up Computer Aids, we decided to get together, Dan and I. We purchased the rights to Vocalize, since that really wasn't our product, even though I had worked on it. And I spent another 2 or 3 months finishing it, and we decided then at that point to start up GW Micro in February of 1990.
Why did you do that? Because it's not a big industry, the market's not huge. It must have been an incredible leap of faith for you to do that.
It was very interesting at the time. It wasn't as tough for me. I was still single. I had really very little obligations, anything like that, where my partner had a family with three kids, and so it was definitely a leap of faith for him. But we got in touch with a very good friend of mine who kind of helped us out. He gave us some office space to work with and all of his whole building and everything that he had. It was in it, a photocopier and all the little things that you don't think of when you're starting up a business. All of that was ours to use as well. And so he helped us very much in the early stages to get started. And both Dan and I, you know, I especially have been in this for so long. It's been pretty much my life. Right into college I had started doing this, and I love doing this type of work, and it was very rewarding. And so I thought, well, why not continue? I've got a year in Vocalize, and I think it's going to be a good product, and so we decided to continue on with it.
Now, as I remember when Vocalize came out, your big sales pitch, and you made a big deal of this, was no macros, and you've stuck to that philosophy right from the beginning and right up to now. It really did take the blind screen reading world by storm when 1.0 was released.
Well, it was a little uphill battle because it was a little late in the game. There were a lot of other products out in the market, and so it took some work to get it up to the point that it was for people to take a serious look at it. Again, because other products had been out there for longer periods of time and pretty well established. But yeah, I think that philosophy of just the ease of use, the ease of configuration, is what people really liked in those early stages, especially.
You tend to have stuck to that pattern. Coming in a little bit later than some into areas such as Windows even, and you always seem to catch up and eventually perhaps arguably overtake.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, I get a little tired of that, playing catch up all the time, but in some respects, I mean, our philosophy is always get the product out right, do a good job as much as possible before the product comes out, not always necessarily be the first one out there. I think the first one out there is nice to say that, but in a lot of cases, they find the problems, they find the pitfalls. So we get to play on that because we come out second or whatever. We get to look at where the mistakes were made and try to capitalize on those mistakes.
So
in some respects, I think it's better that we aren't always out in the forefront, but we are trying to do more of that.
So GW Micro is 10 years old this year.
So it was 9 years old last February, yes.
Yeah, okay, so we're coming up to the 10th anniversary.
That's right.
That's amazing. How many staff do you have now? How big has GW Micro grown?
Right now we're at a total of 13.
Mm. That's a real success story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been very fun. It's been, you know, we're not a huge company, but we're very service-oriented, and we're all a big family. When you go into the office, it's just great because we're just a big family.
Yes, I think you detect that from messages that you see on lists and things, that you seem to be a very cohesive unit as a group.
Right, we definitely are. I'm very proud of everybody there at the office, and they're all from around our little area there, and we just kind of grew to be a big family.
And perhaps it's that battle mentality, that the catch-up, that actually creates that cohesiveness and sense of a team.
That had been mentioned to us before, and that may be true. I think that you work harder if you're second, and if you're at the top, you tend to sit back a little too much, and hopefully that's what's happening to our competition now.
With the benefit of hindsight, how do you think you handled the transition from DOS to Windows?
Well, at the time, we didn't have a lot of resources to work on our Windows products, so we went out and sourced. We actually hired some temporary work. Temporary, it was probably 3 years. And had them work on it while we continued with Vocalize, and we were still working on Vocalize and things. The problem is the place that we contracted out, of course, knew nothing of adaptive software, had not a clue of, you know, what it needs to do, what it doesn't need to do, and so it was very difficult for us to make sure that they stayed on track with things. So I think that took a little bit longer in the end to do it, but we just didn't have the resources in-house to be able to do such a project. So when we got the final product from them, it was usable but still had a lot of work that needed to be done to it. And so we had to then dive back in, learn the product ourselves in-house, and start working on it. So hindsight, if I had to do it all over again, I would rather bring in people in-house and work on it ourselves as opposed to going out sourcing it. and we probably won't ever do that again.
I remember not long after the release of WindowEyes, there was a dueling Windows competition at one of the technology conferences, and WindowEyes really didn't fare too well in that, and I got the feeling that you were feeling a bit despondent about it all after that. Do you think that in retrospect the market was forcing you to release before the product was ready?
Oh, without a doubt. We were just pounded with people needing it, wanting it, having to have it. And I think the first dueling Windows we had, we just released maybe, I think that month. I think we originally released in October of 95, and I think, and that was early October. Late October was closing the gap here in the States, and that was the first dueling Windows. The other products had been out over a year, and we're less than a month old, so that was very difficult.
And it can't have been very good press. I mean, it must have given you a bit of a pounding in technology circles.
It really did, especially at first there. The problem is people are still even going back to those days and saying, well, and back in dueling Windows, but with technology like this, you can't go back more than 6 months, and even that's pushing it. And it's difficult to get people to realize that so that they can take another look at it and continually look at the product out in the market and not necessarily become locked in on one product, especially those that do evaluations and recommendations. They need to see what's all out there.
Does it ever weigh heavily on you that so many blind people are actually depending on you and your company for their jobs, their livelihood, their access to information?
Well, there are times when that's actually a big thrill. I mean, it's great to be able to say that we can do that. We can help blind people get jobs and do things. But on the flip side, as you mentioned, it's difficult because we are getting a lot of requests from a lot of blind people and saying, if you don't do this, I'm going to lose my job. So that does become extremely stressful. But as I said, on the flip side of that, we do have a lot of people calling us up and saying, you know, thank you for your product. I now have a job because of it. And so it's got good sides and bad sides to that.
The upgrade policies that GW Micro implements are extremely generous by anyone's standards, and you get a lot of praise for that. Is there a flip side to that too, which might be that if you charged a little bit more for upgrades and initial purchase, there might be more resources for development and R&D and that kind of thing?
We definitely had thought of doing some of that. There's a lot of reasons why having a higher price is good and why it's bad. It's difficult because right now in the States anyway, there's a lot of people that have to pay for it out of their own pocket. And if we raise the price, they're not going to be able to get the product. We might be able to sell more, but they still can't get the product. And so you make a decision. Do we want to lock out these people that don't have any resources to be able to help them, or do we want to try to get maybe more people because now we have more resources and can go to agencies and things like that who do have the money? And our philosophy is we want to be able to try to help everybody, and so we try to keep our prices as low as possible. And if we can still sell a lot of product, we can get our resources up, which we have done. We've gone from just me back in 1990 doing the programming up to four people that actually do programming for us now. So,
yeah, it's an interesting question because I wonder how many of your sales come from individual blind people and how many come from agencies, and also how many blind people are so desperate for Windows access and so unable to fund it that they continue to use your demo and reboot and reboot.
There are people that do that. There certainly are people, and obviously the majority of our sales are from agencies and things like that. But if I had to go off the top of my head, I would probably say that maybe anywhere from 15 to 20% of our sales are end users, and the remainder would be to agencies and governments and things like that. And the other side of having a higher price, too, and this sounds horrible, but there are people that look at two screen readers. They see ours at, let's say, $595, and they see another one at $200 more. Well, they're going to think the $200 one is inferior because it's $200 less, when in fact it may be superior to the product. And so there are reasons for raising it just for that. But again, we try not to let ourselves do that type of thing. Bottom line, we want to try to keep the price affordable to people as we go with it.
One of the problems that may exist because of a catch-up issue is that other screen readers get a user base, particularly from the agencies and the technology instructors, often so called, I should add, tend to lock themselves into a particular product that they use first and don't have the time or the ability or the inclination to research new products on the market. Do you have any view of the quality of adaptive technology instruction that a lot of blind people have access to, and also the assessment that they receive in terms of what product actually best meets their needs?
I think both of those are actually very, very poor, especially here in the States. I think a lot of the agencies and things that do recommendations, evaluations and things are really doing a giant disservice because, as you said, they don't necessarily have the time or the interest to go off and look at what else is available. They've made a decision based 3 years ago, and they're sticking to it. Or they're selling a product based on, well, that's what I've always recommended, not necessarily because it's a better product. And I see that time after time after time. And the only way to really get around that is individuals who are knowledgeable of the product can go to these people and say, look, I know this is what you're recommending, but this is a better product. This is what I want. And that's really what happened even with Vocalize, because, as I said, Vocalize came out late in the game. And evaluators didn't want to look at it because they knew what they knew and they didn't want to learn anything else. But individuals came up and got them to look at it, forced them basically to open their eyes and see what else was out there. And I'm hoping that that will happen with WindowEyes, and I think it's starting to happen quite a bit now, especially since I think we have the best internet access of any screen reader out in the market. And I think individuals are saying that, and kind of that's getting people to take another hard, serious look at it, because they want good internet access. And now they're starting to see, oh, not only do they have good internet access, but they've got this and this and this.
Yeah, let's talk about that internet access, because Microsoft let you down badly with version 4, and at least one other screen reader was offering alternative methods of accessing that particular browser. You must be feeling pretty pleased at the moment, though.
Right, and that's our whole philosophy, is that we didn't, when Microsoft came out with that, we didn't go in and start kludging WindowEyes and try to hack into it and get everything hacked around so we could support IE4. Now, maybe in the short term, people are saying, why not? I needed access. I wanted it. Well, one, because we already supported IE3, and we did support that fairly well at that time. So there was an option for the majority of people. Now, there were some pages that IE3 wouldn't work with, so those were problems. What we decided to do was get on Microsoft's case, work with them, and we did extensively. We had a very good relationship with their IE department, the Internet Explorer department, and worked very closely with them as they integrated active accessibility into IE. We already had a lot of active accessibility support within WindowEyes. We just added more and more. They added more and more, and it took a lot longer, but as you can see, that all is now paying off. And so we hurt in the short term, but in the long term, it pays off.
Maybe because of dangers to the quality of the relationship with Microsoft and non-disclosure agreements, etc., the public didn't really know that you were entering into such a close relationship until things started to materialize in the betas. And so maybe there was a perception out there that was quite unjustified that you weren't doing anything.
That is very difficult. Microsoft does, through non-disclosure agreements, force us not to talk about what's going on. So it's extremely difficult, and they don't let us show us at shows, trade shows and things. A lot of times our hands are tied and we can't show the product, even though we're working on it and it works very good at that point. So we have to wait until everything's finalized and everything's done and before people see it. But we're certainly not sitting on our hands. We are actively, aggressively working with these manufacturers, especially Microsoft, and all the time.
What about active accessibility and its take-up, not only within Microsoft, which appears to me anyway to be pretty poor still, but the rest of the software industry doesn't appear to have really embraced it?
No, they haven't, and that is frustrating. And I think, and even Microsoft themselves are having a difficult time because they are such a huge company, and they have literally thousands of programs within themselves. And so they're having a hard time implementing it. But we already are seeing tremendous growth within Microsoft itself. They've had accessibility days within Microsoft where we've attended, and they try to educate their employees on, hey, this stuff needs to be addressed in your applications. All the product managers and things like that were there. And so they are aggressively trying to implement that within themselves. They claim that they are also going out to other large manufacturers and evangelizing on active accessibility as well. Unfortunately, we haven't really seen anything large, although just recently IBM with Lotus Notes has integrated MSA. So that's the largest company outside of Microsoft that has supporting MSAA.
So when do you think we'll start seeing active accessibility in products like Encarta and Money and, you know, different products of Microsoft?
Yeah, time, as new releases come out, things are getting added to it. But as I said, it's a huge undertaking for Microsoft because there are so many applications, and they're huge. They're not small applications. But like I say, as new ones come out, it's just going to take a matter of time, maybe a couple years or something like that, before they really get everything integrated into it properly. But if you look back over the last couple of years, you can see a tremendous path that they've taken. They've made some back steps, as you said, with IE. I think they've learned big time from that one not to do that one again.
Yeah, there are lots of people at Microsoft who won't talk to me anymore. Speaking of relationships, what are the relationships like between screen reader vendors? Do you guys work together on any issues, such as when Microsoft drops a bundle like that?
No, unfortunately not. It seemed like back in the old days, back in the 80s and things, the vendors seemed to be more friendly. Where we would talk and kind of even trade some ideas. I remember back, you know, when I was working on the like WordTalk, FileTalk, and all those. I remember Larry Skukan was working with ProWords and ProTerm, kind of the direct competitors of our product. And we'd go to trade shows and we'd kind of talk and say, "Hey, I had a problem with this area," and he'd say, "Oh yeah," and vice versa. And those were, it was kind of fun to be able to talk to somebody like that. But now, unfortunately, I guess due to competition or whatever, but. You can't do that anymore, and unfortunately there is no direct contact between other screen reader manufacturers. It might all be through through other companies. Maybe we indirectly talk to each other, but unfortunately there's a lot of work too and a lot of resources tied up in our end to overcome a problem. And you know, we might spend a month to overcome a problem, and it doesn't make sense, I guess, to, let's say, call up company X and say, "Well, here's how you do it," you know.
So is it just a nothingness, or is there even a bit of hostility there from time to time?
I think with the majority of the vendors, it's pretty much nothing, but there are a couple that are pretty nasty, I think. And I think that's just their mentality, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect you to name them, of course.
No.
That does raise the question, though. I know that you've recently hired Clarence Whaley, who is managing sales and who is a superb communicator. Is there a perception that WindowEyes or GW Micro had to become a little bit more upfront with its marketing of its products?
Absolutely. If we have a weakness, that is our weakness, is marketing. I think that's why our competition got so far ahead of us, because they have an extremely strong marketing department. I think our development department is better, but their marketing department is far superior to ours. And so we saw that. There's so many people that have come to us and said, "Doug, you know, your product is extremely good. You need to get it out and let people know that it exists," because there are many people that have never even heard of WindowEyes. So now our goal is with Clarence, and he is very good. He's got 20 years of sales under his belt, to get out there and evangelize us more. And right today, he's off at a trade show, and the poor guy never gets to stay home. He's off trying to show off our product to more and more people.
Yes, he really does do a good job of communicating with the users in an extremely easy-to-understand manner.
Right, he's, like I say, he's definitely, not only, and he's not a typical salesman either. He's got a lot of technical support under his belt as well, so he can explain things to users without doing that sales approach that people are so tired of.
While we're talking about individuals, Mike Lawler must have been there for a very long time now.
Right, Mike right now is, well, he's probably our second oldest employee that we have right now.
Mm. And he's certainly a bit of a personality on the list and things. He seems to handle a lot of the inquiries and do it with a lot of patience.
Right. It gets difficult when trying to monitor. He monitors a lot of the lists, of course, our own. He monitors all the time, reads every message through that, and responds to a lot of that. He handles all the direct email coming through our support email line. He does tech support on the phone, and he also does some programming. So he definitely has his fingers into a lot of things, and he's extremely knowledgeable, probably the most knowledgeable on our staff, as far as, just because he's been around for so long and has seen so many different combinations and permutations of everything. So he's kind of the guy to go to, especially if you got a difficult question.
That institutional memory is just worth so much, isn't it?
Yeah. And he's got a memory that never fades, and mine is going more and more every day, but he has a tendency to remember every little detail.
Married life has that effect on people, by the way. I'll tell you what, if he reads every message on that list of yours, he deserves some sort of medal.
That's right.
Now, we need to talk about the future, because everybody's interested in that, but before we talk about Window Eyes specifically, I wanted to discuss the future of the screen reading industry generally, because I had an email from a user who's going to be listening to this program who mentioned that she had read that Windows 2000 was going to be offering narration facilities that would use, I guess, MS Speech to speak menu items, etc. And one wonders whether this is the beginning of Microsoft's entry into the screen reading industry. You've also got standalone programs in the internet domain, such as Homepage Reader and PW WebSpeak. Do you perceive that the screen reader industry may one day be under considerable threat?
I personally don't, but I am definitely in the minority. I know that a lot of our competitors out there feel very strongly that Microsoft is trying to take over and that they will be out of business in a few years. I don't feel that one bit. Just because, yes, Windows 2000 will have a product called Narrator, which is a very, very basic screen reader. It doesn't have all the frills that you come to love with WindowEyes or whatever product you're using. It doesn't have that. And I'm not sure that Microsoft themselves are capable of that. And even if they do make the product better, and it is free, which that's a difficult one. We can't give our product away like they can. But even if they do make it better, I don't think it's ever going to have the advantages that we have today. And they definitely can't even come anywhere close to our support. So even if you're using the product and you have a question, I don't know if you've ever tried to deal with Microsoft support, but it's pretty much non-existent. And especially when it comes to software like this, it just I don't think would ever happen. And I kind of equate this to, Microsoft also gives away WordPad. Did that hurt their sales of Word? I don't think that it did, or they wouldn't put it out. So
right.
I kind of see that as the same thing.
Now, Windows 2000 is on the horizon. Does that mean that we have seen the last version of WindowEyes for Windows 95, 98, 3.1?
Definitely not, no. We're currently working on another release that will support Braille displays, for instance. We're definitely continuing to support Windows 95 and Windows 98. We probably will, in our next major release, drop the Windows 3.1 support. Just because it becomes unrealistic for us to continually go back to that old of an operating system and test it to make sure that it still works and everything's still happy there. That's just almost impossible now to have Windows 3.1, Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows 2000, and be proficient in all of them and be able to test in all of them. So we will be dropping that, but we certainly will be supporting 95 and 98 for some time. And we are working on our Windows 2000 version, of course. And I was even showing that at our last major show that we had here in the States. But right now they're looking to be two totally separate products.
Do you have the resources to sustain that?
Well, they're two separate products, but yet they are intertwined. They're still one product, but so the majority of the code is the same, identical in both products. It's just compiled differently, 32-bit, 16-bit, whatever the case may be. So they each have their specifics that they need because of the difference between the operating system. But the majority, probably 90% of the code, is still shared between the two products.
And the release that supports Braille displays, that'll be 4.0, will it?
We're not exactly sure what we're going to call it, but that's probably what we'll call it because that will be a major enhancement to WindowEyes. So we'll probably go to the 4.0 at that point.
The average home user, are they going to want to upgrade to Windows 2000?
I personally would say no. At least at this point, I would say no. As machines get faster and faster and more memory and more memory, then maybe they would ultimately go to it. But if it were me today, I would say no. I'm sticking with 95 or 98.
And it'll be quite an expensive product, I hear.
I'm not sure what it's going to hit the market at, but I imagine that it will be more. But I also imagine as time goes on, it will come down in price.
Let's talk about WindowEyes and Cakewalk, because it's been a topic that's been hotly debated. From what I can gather just reading, and I'm not a Cakewalk user, it seems to me that there's a perception that Cakewalk Access needs more work, and yet you're saying that actually Cakewalk Access is quite adequate at the moment. Is that correct?
Well, there's certainly work that needs to be done on it. A lot of the Cakewalk can be accessed through some set files that a couple individuals have worked with. Those set files can get you through it. They're not clean. They don't necessarily give you the information in a way that would be most pleasing, but in a lot of cases you can still get the information. But there are some areas that unfortunately still are not accessible. Others, maybe you go into the area and it's not accessible, but you have to hit a couple keys and all of a sudden it now starts reading correctly. Little things like that that could be cleaned up. We have worked with when Cakewalk has been around for a long time, and when I think they came out with version 7, they drastically changed one of the ways that they would highlight the information on the screen, which broke every screen reader out in the market and made it pretty much totally unusable at that point. So we did go in at that within WindowEyes, and we modified it to be able to handle the way that they were tracking the light bar. It was a very non-standard way of doing it, but everything's fair game, I guess, in Windows. So we modified it to work with that, and then we started tracking that, and that's what made it to the point that it is now. But it would be nice to go in and do some more modification to it. And I see that, as you said, just recently on our list, it became a very heated topic. A lot of the Cakewalk users feel that we're leaving them behind and we're going off into other areas. And the problem is it all comes back down to what we were talking about before, and that is resources. We look at the total number of people, and as I said on our list when Cakewalk became an issue, at this latest conference, I think there were 2,000 individuals that had registered for this conference. And literally, I had met several hundred individuals came to our booth. And probably a high percentage, probably 80% of them wanted to know about the Internet. And we did great, and I loved to show it off to them. And probably 60% asked about Braille displays, and one individual asked me about Cakewalk. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not users out there. It just means that those are the numbers that we look at when we figure out, okay, we have to do work with WindowEyes. What do we do first? And the Internet, we spend a lot of time on that. And we spend a lot of time with Microsoft on that. But it helps a large majority of people. Had we spent that same amount of time and worked with Cakewalk, we'd make these, let's say, 75 to 100 people extremely happy. But then all these people that want Internet are going to be extremely frustrated and probably going off to another product because we don't support the Internet.
One thing that interests me is that with certain other screen readers, there's a real community of configuration file, whatever they use, writers, and they often FTP up some very clever configurations. For some reason, WindowEyes doesn't appear to have attracted that same degree of user input where people are freely exchanging quite clever set files, and that's not to say that the power doesn't exist within the WindowEyes itself. It just seems to be not a culture that's developed within the WindowEyes user community.
I think that that is growing. We are starting to get more and more people to submit these settings to us, but you're right, and I'm not exactly sure why that is. I know that there are a lot of, you know, with some of the others that have the scripting language that you have to work with, there's some high-powered users that actually get a thrill, I think, out of the challenge of writing a script and doing that. Where with WindowEyes, I don't necessarily see the people out there saying, you know, as a challenge to do that. And for some reason, they just don't submit them. A lot of individuals will configure it for their app, but only in the areas that they use. And they feel, well, since I didn't do the other areas, I can't submit it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. You're obviously very optimistic about the future.
Absolutely. I think we've got a long way to go, but we've come a long way, and I'm very much looking forward to the potential and what's ahead.